Outlap F1 podcast listeners, we know that the Baku GP was phenomenal and brought all kinds of action-packed drama all the way to the very end. However, we've got a couple of weeks before the next race, and I know you want to keep those heart-pounding thrills coming your way, so we are so proud to partner with Universal Pictures for the new film, Nobody. Father's Day no longer has to be ordinary once you bring home the non-stop action in Nobody. Bob Odenkirk stars as an ordinary dad turned lethal vigilante, and his fight for his family can now thrill yours with never-before-seen bonus content, including deleted scenes. From the writer of John Wick, Nobody is yours to own now on digital and on 4K, Blu-ray, DVD on June 22nd. Go check it out. You will not be disappointed.
Baruch is an electronic toothbrush that will change the way you think about brushing your teeth. With powerful sonic technology and ultra-gentle bristles, the Baruch redefines what it means to have super clean teeth. It's like that feeling when you just leave the dentist. A fresh, whole mouth clean every single day. Our listeners get 15% off their total purchase with code POD15. Follow the link in the show notes and enter the code POD15 to get your exclusive discount and upgrade your oral care routine.
This is the Outlap F1 Podcast featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap.
Welcome to Season 3, Episode 23 of the Outlap F1 Podcast. This is the French Grand Prix Race Review. I am your host, James, along with John and Andy. Fortunately, our fourth co-host, Deanna, is out this evening. But we have quite a unexpectedly good race, I think it's safe to call it, the French Grand Prix. John, I know, well, first of all, happy Father's Day, sir.
Thank you, sir.
How is the beach? How's your day going?
It's good. I got to sleep in today. So I watched the race. Not like I have any signal here. So I've had to do a little masterclass rewiring at my Airbnb down here in Carolina Beach, North Carolina. But it's been good. So I finally got to watch the race. Had to do it via sitting in a car via an iPad on cell service. So it was an interesting day. But it was, like you said, actually a very enjoyable French Grand Prix. It was a good one, and the day's been good.
Good, and props to you, John. You were, I think, the only one of the four really saying, I think this might be a pretty good race this year.
And I just had a feeling. Maybe it was that it was on Father's Day, and I just kind of had some good vibes flowing. You know, sitting on the beach, you know, with the little one. But
you're not typically the optimist of the group either, so it's kind of off putting. But
no, I'm typically the pessimist. Yeah, here. I'm the glass half empty. But you know, once in a while, I got to shake it up a little bit.
For sure. Yeah, Andy, how are you doing?
I was going to say, I set the bar so ridiculously low, so I was going to be entertained no matter what. But this was damn entertaining. This was a fun race.
Yes, it was. But before we get into the race, I have to remind everybody, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Discord, and Reddit at the handle at Outlap F1 Podcast. Or, of course, you can check out the link tree we have on our Twitter profile. You can email the show at chatnow@outlapf1.com. And, of course, you can check out our website at www.outlapf1.com, where you can find things like the Us page, learn a little bit about us four co-hosts, or you can find actually all of our episodes. A few I would recommend would be the F1 for Beginners for anybody who's still fairly new to the sport, which there are plenty of you and more coming, it seems, race by race, which is awesome to see. But that's Season 3, Episode 6. You can also check out our Sabre Cook interviews, W Series Racer, Sabre Cook, that is. That's Season 2, Episode 2, and Season 3, Episode 21. Boys, I missed that second interview with Sabre, but I did get to listen to it. Excellent job to the both of you. What did you think about Sabre this time, John?
Yeah, I mean, Sabre is always a fan favorite to have on the show. She's a phenomenal person. It's, you know, it's nice to have an American, you know, on the grid talking, you know, open wheel, formula type series racing. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. She always, you know, brings the best to the show. And yeah, I definitely encourage you to listen to both of them. Personally, I think if you listen to them both back to back, it kind of flows well. The first episode that we had her on, a lot of it was more of a get to know you. You know, it was like, I think March or something like that of 2020. So like right before the pandemic hit. So it was more just kind of getting to know Sabre as a whole, you know, talking about growing up with life as, you know, your dad being a motocross rider and things like that, and kind of growing up around the track and karting and all the things that kind of led to where she is today. And then this latest episode, we talked, you know, pretty much focus more on modern day current, W Series. We talked about e-racing as W Series did a lot of that in 2020. So just, I think back to back, it was phenomenal episodes. So definitely check both of those out if you haven't had a chance to do so yet.
For sure. And when you're checking things out, make sure you also check out Deanna's YouTube channel. That's Relapped with Deanna. I think she's still on the 1981 Monaco GP. Give her a break. A little slow on the content after her surgery, repairing a nerve and all of these things. So I'm sure she'll be back to that very soon.
Yeah, we're waiting for the hand to get free of the bubble wrap.
She can't flip us the bird at this point. So it's a couple more weeks before we can get back to that.
You can always help support the show by checking out in the show link description at the end. You can donate $1, $5, $10 all through the Anchor website to help out the show. All that goes back into using the show and using this new wonderful recording software that you guys mentioned in the last episode. So this is pretty fun being able to see and talk to you guys now. And then, of course, you can check out Manscaped with code OUTLAP, OUTLAP, all one word, for 20% off and free shipping. Go take a look at their stuff. It is all awesome, and they are really doing a good job helping us out. So now we can talk a little bit about Formula One, which is what we all came here for. And we're going to start off with our headlines of the day. Andy, take it away.
So for a race, if I would have told you that this race had zero retirements, zero safety cars, and zero yellow flags, you probably would have said that this was a boring-ass race. It's exactly what we would have expected. But no, this ended up proving to be a hugely entertaining French GP. I was quite impressed with the show today.
Pleasantly surprised indeed. John, what do you got for headline of the day?
I guess for me it would be the day that Mercedes' strategy was so bad that I can't even make fun of Ferrari that much. So, and maybe the day that Bottas just proved once again just how Bottas-y he is.
It's comments like that, John, that make me glad you were actually able to make the recording tonight.
I try to bring my A game once in a while.
Yeah. For me, my headline of the day, I've got the power of the undercut, which was good and bad in my eyes. Ferrari didn't have the best of day, but I did have a little bit of hope there early on when Leclerc really got to show the field how powerful the undercut was going to be today. But that was about it for Ferrari. But my Sunday was saved thanks to Red Bull's perfect execution of the undercut. And Mercedes just deciding to
sleep,
not do that,
not cover. Yeah. Very simple. They just decided not to cover.
Yeah, something tells me we'll be touching on that a couple more times throughout the episode. So for now, we'll go to Andy for our wonderful qualifying recap.
So in qualifying, which was in the dry and in the really, really warm temperatures of Saturday, going out in P20, he did not set a lap time because he hit the wall. That would be Yuki Tsunoda. P19 also did not get out of that session. That was Lance Stroll. That left P18 for Nikita Mazepin. P17 was Kimi Raikkonen. P16 was Nicholas Latifi. Going out of Q1 and advancing to Q2 for the first time in his career, however, he binned it when he did it, that would be Mick Schumacher. P14, Mr. Saturday once again, George Russell. P13 was Antonio Giovinazzi. P12, Sebastian Vettel. And P11 was Esteban Ocon. The top 10 from 10 to 1. In P10, we had Daniel Ricciardo. P9, Fernando Alonso. P8, Lando Norris. P7, Charles Leclerc. P6, Pierre Gasly. P5, Carlos Sainz. P4, Sergio Perez. P3, Valtteri Bottas. P2, Lewis Hamilton. And with a lap time of 129.990, Max Verstappen on the pole.
You know what?
Thank you.
It wouldn't be a Formula One qualifying without a Ferrari powered car bending it into the wall and benefiting from it, right?
Using lessons learned from his father.
I think my favorite meme of the weekend so far, and I haven't really gotten to dig into him yet from today's race, but the one with Spider-Man being like Leclerc showing like the younger baby Spider-Man.
Yep.
You learn from classic. The best.
Classic. But yeah, pretty good qualifying. I know one of the three of us got 2 points from our predictions on that qualifying, so little teaser for later. But let's go ahead and start talking about the race. And for that, we must first discuss the back markers. And in 20th place, friend of the show, Nikita Mazepin. So another day. Interesting to note, our prop bet was how many finishes we'd have. I want to say Deanna was the closest when she said 19, but all 20 people finished. Yeah. So, is there anything nice you can say about Haas for Mazepin in 20th and Mick in 19th, Andy?
Not all that much. Yeah, I mean, they're just kind of at the back today, against themselves. I guess they're more, it's more interesting to see them battling with themselves and basically Mick screaming back to Gunther Steiner all the time about how bad his teammate is.
I'd say it's just another week where Mazepin just tries to kill his teammate. That's pretty much what I saw out there. I mean, yeah. You had that bullshit non-apology from Nikita Mazepin, midweek, I think it was, guys, and you would think maybe someone in his family is a politician or something like that, because couldn't get more of a bullshit apology if you tried. And then you basically try to run. I mean, you guys are running around dead last, and you're running your teammate off the track when you're, a mile behind the nearest competition. Like, come on, guys, grow the hell up. What a joke.
Well put. Next up in 18th, we had Nicholas Latifi. Not much on his day. Kimi Raikkonen, a somewhat surprising 17th. Not a great day for Kimi. But then we'll move right into 16th place right now. And I need to talk about my guy, the one Charles Leclerc. Didn't qualify on pole for the first time in
a month. Pretty much.
So that was something. Started the day in 7th, obviously finished in 16th, got 0 points to the team. Just not a good day. Coming into the race weekend, it was announced by Ferrari that they would no longer be developing this 2021 car and putting all resources towards the 2022 regs. Didn't expect that to really change things as instantly as it did, but I think it was more of anything just this Ferrari car isn't going to excel at these sort of tracks. This is where I thought the Mercedes was going to shine, but really the Red Bull looked just as good as it has all year. But this is not the track for Ferrari. The tire degradation was unreal. Charles got that early undercut and made it look really, really good. And then even right away after that happened, and then Ricciardo pitted, all they were talking about was Ricciardo gained 2 places on that undercut. It's like, well, Charles Leclerc did the same thing because he's literally in front of Ricciardo. So it's kind of weird that they're ignoring that. But after that, those tires just fell off a cliff for him. I was expecting something good out of him because in FP, I think it was pretty much over the free practices, he had a couple of hard tire runs that actually looked pretty good, and he seemed to be on pace on those. So I was holding out hope, but
James, just wasn't his day. I know you weren't on the preview episode, so we didn't have a chance to make fun of you to your face, so we did it behind your back like we normally do. But, you had Charles Leclerc being on the podium this week, and I said, I didn't necessarily agree with that on the prediction episode. I thought maybe it was just a little Mercedes hate from your part. But care to dive into that thought process a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, that was a bad decision. Were you drinking when you made that decision?
Probably.
I'm not going to confirm nor deny those allegations. I was drinking the Kool-Aid. We'll leave it at that.
I got two
Red Bulls on the podium. I just didn't want to say a Mercedes. So whoops.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, I had actually, as of like Saturday night, had like prepared all these really nice Ferrari talking points because they had superly impressed me again this weekend. And then Sunday happened. I don't think it's a matter of pace with them. It's just a matter of they could not take care of the tires. And once their tires went off the cliff first, they just sank. I know he did come in and do a second pit stop, but by then it was way too late.
Way too late though.
Yeah, nothing that could be done about it to salvage the weekend for him.
When I saw Charles come in, I think he was the very first runner into the pits, right? Correct me if I'm wrong from my little iPad view. But
yep. the first guy in the top 10 to pit. I'm not sure if one of like the back markers did, but
no, nobody gives a shit about for driver, but I think he was potentially the first. That was one, we've always kind of given Charles a little bit of hate about his ability to manage tires. And when I saw him come in first, I was like, that's a little, I'm not sure how this is going to work out. I mean, and then obviously, like you said, it looked good for a hot minute there. But it was just, they were asking way too freaking much. So, either it was the strategies, either the tires were completely shot when he came in and it's just a chassis, type thing, or they were trying to just, like I said, the undercut worked for a little bit, but being to ask him to do that many laps is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Especially if you're complaining 10 laps in that basically the tires are already shot on the mediums.
Yeah, I think one of the silver linings I take away from this nonsense today was, like, at least it was both drivers complaining about the tire deg, and both drivers really had trouble with him. If it would have just been Charles, I would have been a little worried about some of his previous issues, like you mentioned, with tires and things. But it was both drivers. It was a car issue, I think, and just wasn't Ferrari's track. But they're focused on 2022, so only good will come from this.
Well, I'll give you something else to feel good about there, James, and that's the fact that, one, Mattia's stepping back in his role, and two, we get to see more of the dude who's replacing him, and that's Loren Menkes. And I got a chance to listen to him in the team principal's press conference, and I got to tell you, I was impressed. That dude doesn't have the same, like, Ferrari red mist about him. He was actually saying, like, real answers to real questions. If that's the guy that they're tapping to do more of the hands-on, one-on-one, you know, day-to-day stuff, they're going to be good for a while. I liked what I saw.
Interesting. I'm going to have to go back and check that out, Andy. Thank you. All right, so we'll move on now. 15th place, Antonio Giovinazzi. Pretty much had a Giovinazzi day, so I don't think there's really anything to talk about there.
Alfa Romeo in general had an Alfa Romeo.
I don't know what the hell happened.
Not good enough in the points and just bad.
Yeah, they weren't there at all. Then you got Esteban Ocon in 14th at his home race, and Yuki Tsunoda in 13th, who started from the pit straight, correct?
Correct. Yeah, after he had to go change his gearbox after the wreck in qualifying, and that meant a pit lane start for him. Rallied all the way to P13, which wasn't bad, but... yeah, not enough to get necessarily in the points. I think the book is out on him that he's got a lot of talent, but needs to calm down a little bit. And I think they've hired him, or they were talking on the broadcast. I don't know if they've hired him a driver coach, but he probably, if they haven't, they should get one really quickly because it seems like he needs one.
Yeah, that was a weird shot from qualifying when he crashed, right? With the gearbox.
Yeah, and the car did this whole, like, weird oscillation thing at the back.
Well, Crofty referred to it as twerking at the beginning of the...
Or F1 car belly dancing.
Car going back with his gearbox trying to go forward. Never a good combination on an F1 gearbox, for sure.
Yeah.
But, yeah, yeah. That shuddering was, like, awkward looking. But yeah,
I was just saying, I mean at least I was impressed in the early running of this because to start from pit lane, it wasn't that many laps into the race when I looked over the pylon and he was up to, like, you know, P15 or something. And I was like, you know, to start from pit lane and to that quickly be already up five places, it looked like it was going to end up being, you know, around a, you know, P10 to P12 type day. So P13, I guess, not bad considering all things. But yeah, I agree with you guys. I mean, he's a little bit of a hothead. He might need to have a little bit of a driver coach slash, you know, therapist like Lewis and all the greats have on there. Just kind of just calm down a little bit, you know, keep themselves in their own heads and not getting too crazy out there.
Yeah, I think he felt somewhat the same. Like, his comments after the race was he was glad to finish the race and just continue to get that experience and that time in the seat. Anything on Esteban Ocon's day? You know, signs the contract, home race.
Yeah,
kind of a dud.
Just kind of surprising that, you know, they just didn't – he could not put it together. You know, he just thought that they were lacking something. Pace wasn't there on either tire. Your car not being nice to it. But his teammate was able to get something out of it, as we're going to talk about in a little bit. So just don't know if the things – if this was the Alonso effect or if it was something technical. But not the race that Esteban would have wanted in front of his home fans – right after signing Elon.
Hopefully he didn't pull like, you know, we joke about it in American sports all the time about guys on their final year of their contracts, you know, just throwing down. And then the moment they sign that contract, it just all goes to shit. hopefully it's not the case. Ocon signing that long year. Misses the first race, I feel like, this season where finally, you know, the two-time world champion has actually had the better of the group there. Typically, it seems like Ocon's been leading the way all season. You know, a little bit of awkward timing there with signing the deal and then not having your best race for sure at your home track, unfortunately, for yourself and the team for that matter.
Yep. Well, he secured the bag.
That's
really all that matters.
That is true.
all right. So we'll go ahead, get out of these back markers and move on to the midfield with probably fan favorite Mr. George Russell with a pretty outstanding day, I'd say, for Williams. Andy, what do you think about his day?
Yeah, this is P12, and it's P12 on merit. This was obviously, like we said, there were no retirements. So he had to do all of this on track. Probably his best result He seemed to think in the post race that it was like his best result in a Williams since he's been there. This is a strategy all came together. And with that result, we talked about this last time with Haas, with Mick Schumacher getting P13. P12 is now the best non-points finish for Williams. So they retake P9 in the constructors with it. So Mr. Saturday came through big time on Sunday and gets Williams one place up in the constructors.
The Americans are dead last again. Yeah. Woo.
Well, Williams is owned by an American company, so we're, you know, it's one passing the other.
Yeah, I like your optimism. Good point. That's your skill set.
Yep.
Yes. And so that leads right into Carlos Sainz finishing 11th. Not really too much to comment on his day that I didn't already say during Charles Leclerc. Just bad day for Ferrari. But Sainz did, you know, started ahead of Leclerc after qualifying and finished ahead of him in the race. I think him starting fifth was a really, really nice lap for him in qualifying. But that's about all I got on him. Hopefully he has a better weekend in Austria.
Trying to watch the two of those on track, you know, and then watching the pylons and watching their sector times, I feel like both of them were just all over the place today. And, I mean, at one point I thought Charles is going to finish ahead. The next point, you know, Science is passing him. You know, it just seemed like, I don't know, it was just an awkward race, I think, all around for Ferrari, unfortunately.
Well, Andy? I would take some, again, solace in the fact that this was more systemic because it happened to both of them. It wasn't just, you know, we talked about Leclerc having issues with the tires. Carlos Sainz is pretty good at keeping his tires going when he needs to. The fact that it happened to both of them almost at the exact same time, it's not a pace thing. It was a tire deg thing, and this track, this, you know, whatever, the asphalt, the conditions, the type of corners, you know, what we didn't have. We didn't have as hot weather as we thought we were going to have, and we don't have low-speed corners. So it wasn't as good of a day for Ferrari as it's been in the last couple rounds.
And we've got
rounds,
three ridiculously long straightaways, you know, where they couldn't, because of the corners, they couldn't quite trim it out the way they did previously. You know, James, I was really looking forward to talking about Sainz overtaking Leclerc tonight, but then neither one of them did very well. So I was like, I'll hold that for another day.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so then moving past Ferrari and Sainz there in 11th, we move into Aston Martin territory, holding it down 10th and 9th for Lance Stroll and Sebastian Vettel. John, what'd you think about your boys' day-to-day?
I'll take it. Like, considering, like, where obviously where they've been, they've had a couple of races now, two, three races now, where I feel like both drivers are now starting to get where we expect of that car. You know, clearly, as far as our bet goes, I was hoping that Aston Martin was going to be a little bit better this year than it actually is. But, I mean, it's encouraging to see both of them up in the standings. You know, again, they've got Mercedes horsepower, but, you know, Mercedes as a whole hasn't been that great on horsepower tracks this year. It seems like they've been a slight step down the last couple of weeks on horsepower tracks compared to Honda. So it was good to see them up there competing. All in all, and then for Lance to start where he is because of the whole debacle that was Q1, I mean, you know, I like to give Lance a lot of hate, but I mean, all the credit to the guy, both drivers really had to pull everything out, all the stops out today to make it happen. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm very impressed with both to get a solid points finish, 3 points on the day for the team.
So Andy, I mentioned how Ferrari's has said now that they're going to focus solely on 2022. For a team like Aston Martin now, who is 4 points behind the somewhat surprising AlphaTauri, and 11 points clear of Alpine, do you see Aston Martin still continue to develop this 2021, or at some point are they just going to push towards 2022 and see if they can make a big jump next year?
I see them much more looking at 2022. The issues with this car are almost more fundamental than anything else. The high rake versus the low rake, and you know, it kind of got back to that a little bit today with them. But what they were able to do, this car was extremely good on its tires, and because of that, they were able to go super long. I don't think Vettel came in until like lap 33, 34, something like that. And these were on the tires that they both of them started the race with. So the fact that they were able to extend and get more life out of the hard tire with a lot of other teams not able to do that today, enabled them to kind of to come home in the points. And, you know, good for both of them. I mean, this is what they were trying. This is what Stroll was specifically trying to do in Azerbaijan, and obviously never got a chance to finish it. So this is what they can do when they
are. Yeah, I think with the cash influx with Lawrence Stroll, from a monetary standpoint and the constructor standings, I don't think they're that concerned with 21. I hope for their sake that they've got all of their attention on 2022 and they're just kind of surviving and, you know, live to fight another day type approach for this year.
Yeah, I'm really hoping they go all in and then some on 2022 because my lead is now down to 22 points.
I was going
to
say, you're within a race lead, John.
I know, we are.
All you got to do is win a race and one Leclerc, no score. It's a whole new ball game.
I'm not going to say I'm getting worried because I feel like I'm not yet, but
you shouldn't
I'm getting
be.
Close
but
to that point.
If you want to be, go listen, for it.
You know, not to take us too far off track, but I would assume that Ferrari is going to have a very good couple of weeks at Austria, would be my guess, based on the characteristics of that track and the weather that we typically have there. Yeah.
I'm hoping it's hot.
Ass temps, and I think that, you know, in a DRS train type situation, I think they're going to do all right. So I would, if I were you, I wouldn't be that concerned. Now, if it's not the case when we come out of Austria, and if we've got a nice little points battle between the two teams, then yeah, you might have to worry a little bit, but I have a feeling Ferrari's going to pull away substantially in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, realistically, I'm not that worried.
Just edit that part out. We'll just edit that out. See, this is what I get for being optimistic. You usually went the other way, right?
All right, so next up in eighth place, we got Fernando Alonso. Andy, tell us about the two-time champ.
Solid day. You know, starting eighth, he finished eighth. Basically he was happy with the result. He wasn't expecting the tires to degrade like they did. He kind of went through a period where, you know, he definitely suffered from some graining, but he worked through it and was able to find pace kind of late and really rallied to get into, I think it was him, Gasly, Ricciardo, and to a lesser extent, even Norris with a really good kind of finish there. So definitely back in the mix. Him, a lot of the guys who we'd been saying had kind of been struggling, you know, guys in new teams, really showed well today. So, I mean, and it makes sense kind of given the timing. So, you know, Fernando reengages. Daniel Ricciardo, who we're going to talk about in a minute, he reengaged big time this weekend. We saw Sergio Perez continue to develop and do good things for Red Bull today. So all the guys kind of in new cars, in new places, starting to get their arms around it a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. John, anything on Alonso?
To follow up on Andy's points, for a good couple of minutes there, I thought this was going to be a disaster of a race for Fernando Alonso. It seemed like he was getting train wrecked there for a little bit, for a few laps. I mean, everybody was cutting him, it looks like. You know, I thought once Ricciardo got him and then Norris, it seemed like just kind of snuck right past him as Alonso was stuck in the dirty air going around the long swooper there. I was like, damn, this is not looking good. This is going to be a bad race. But I mean, yeah, to your point, Andy, I don't know where it came from exactly. I guess he just got through the graining period perhaps, but I mean, yeah, found a lot of speed there at the end. So all in all, you know, a decent day for what probably shouldn't have been on paper.
Yeah. And then, so in front of him, we have Pierre Gasly, who continues to impress, started the day in sixth, finished in seventh, good for 6 points. You know, Gasly, another strong day. I don't know if there's a driver on the grid this year so far that has gotten more out of their car as far as race pace goes than Pierre Gasly. I'd have to say probably single lap pace. I'd say Leclerc is getting the most out of that Ferrari because they have two pole positions in the Ferrari at this point in the season. Nobody saw that coming. But when it comes to Sundays, I think Pierre Gasly is king this year because he just extracts every bit of performance out of that AlphaTauri. Super impressive. As he's been since the midway point last year when he got dumped down. But yeah, another great day by Gasly.
I was going to ask you real fast, on him, since you weren't on the preview episode, we talked about, ahead. Obviously, you know, with some of the silly season stuff kicking off with Ocon signing, there was a lot of rumors that Pierre was going to potentially go to Alpine. James, real fast, I mean, where do you think that leaves Gasly? I ran a poll on Twitter, 87% think he's going to re-sign with AlphaTauri, considering that they believe that they're a sister team now, not a junior team. But what do you think?
Yeah, vote in your poll was for AlphaTauri. I didn't really want him to go to Alpine. I want to continue to root for him. So if he could avoid Alpine, that'd be great. But no, I guess I could maybe see Alfa Romeo, but that'd be such a big switch. I want them to ride with AlphaTauri here. Yeah, maybe they're not like a true sister team, but I mean, he's having a great year. I don't know what he could have possibly.
Well, I mean, Helmut Marko could find something.
Just have another year at AlphaTauri.
But, you know, I think that's really the only thing. Well, I think he's the only one in the whole organization that doesn't like the guy. So, and obviously he has a lot of sway. So.
And ultimately, I don't see him having another shot at Red Bull.
Not in the foreseeable future.
I don't know if I see that happening, but there could be different opportunities. I mean, who knows who's going to be driving a year from now, 2 years from now. So I think you should stick around at AlphaTauri.
Unless something crazy happens with like a Lewis retirement and a Max switching over, something crazy. Like, I think that's his only shot at moving him on up. And I mean, there's no telling how that could all work out. But yeah, I mean, we both thought, you know, Alfa Romeo was probably the only shot outside of AlphaTauri that, you know, he had left in him. Hopefully that's not the case.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy clearly has shown he can get over the gremlins. He has talent. We'd hate to see him fall off the grid.
Yeah. Or Williams wows them with their presentation of 2022 cars.
Well, you know, like, they got that tiger stripe paint scheme. Probably not, though. So, yeah, you know, it's such a pretty thing.
Yeah. All right, so let's go ahead and talk about McLaren, who just dominated Ferrari today. I'll say it.
Well, I mean, considering where both of these guys started and where they both ended up, you really couldn't have drawn this any better, you know, in terms of a fight for P3. So Ricciardo starting 10th, finishing 6th, probably this is one of his better weekends as a whole in the McLaren. Definitely looks like he's getting on par with it. Yep.
Could that be the PMT effect, Andy? Christian Horner goes on part of my take. Red Bull takes first place. Danny Ricciardo was just on. Now
just
he's
think
all
what
of a sudden
they
having
do
his best race
McLaren. That's all I'm saying.
Couldn't hurt. Yeah. He'd be a hell of an interview. We'd love to have him.
Andy, I don't think Andy could get ahead.
Yeah, but I mean,
the driver, he'd probably just sit there and stutter. And I don't even know what would happen if we had McLaren driver on the show. We'd have to.
Journalistic integrity. I'd have to really dig deep.
In our ears as he's screaming.
There you go.
Sorry.
Anyway, back to my analysis of the race weekend as best as I can. Danny Rick got his elbows out a little bit. He was able to make some overtakes. It was good to see. Felt a lot more confident in getting good encouragement from his engineers this weekend. Pace was still not necessarily where Lando is, but definitely improving. So, hello, Daniel Ricciardo. It's nice to see you again. In terms of Lando Norris, he started 8th. He finished 5th. Really got mugged at the start. Went way back. His team kind of had to convince him to kind of change strategies, and they split strategies, which was an interesting call. They pitted Ricciardo kind of went with everybody else. They extended Lando's stint on the medium tire very long. Basically came on the radio at one point and said, these tires are dead. You got to get me in. And that's when they finally did bring him in. And it put him on a very racy strategy. He had to make a lot of overtakes. He had to go through, I think, 5 or 6 different cars. And he was able to do it. Able to do it all the way up to P5. And that was where as good as they were going to be, because I think he finished like 30 seconds or something behind a Bottas. So heck of a good result for the team. Lando is the only driver to finish in the points in every race this season. His worst finish has been P5. So well done.
That's crazy. So Andy, if you would have asked
that's pretty impressive.
30 laps into this race, if Lando was going to finish ahead of Ricciardo, I would have laughed at you probably. But Andy,
I would have thought so too.
Considering that they kept him out there so long and he came out so far behind after they finally pitted him, do you put, like, if you had to name who's more responsible for his P5 result today, do you put that on strategy or do you put that on raw talent overcoming strategy? Because it didn't look like it. I mean, obviously it all worked out at the end with a P5 there. But is that Lando just saying, you know, grabbing life by the stones and just saying, hell no, I'm going to get up there again? Or was that actually a strategy masterclass in your mind?
I think it's I hate to cop out, but I think it's a combination of the two.
That's a cop out,
because obviously the strategy put him on a tire that wasn't as degraded as everybody else. So everybody else was going through the graining phase. He hadn't done that yet. by the time he hit the graining phase, he was past most of those other cars. So they came back at him a little bit, but it really didn't matter. Once he got past his teammate, he was able to get into clean air and really separate. So some really nice overtaking moves. So I would credit, you know, driver talent in that regard. The battle with Gasly was actually quite entertaining from both sides. You know, Lando probably came on the radio and did the obligatory, he pushed me off the track, give him a penalty call. But I don't think he really believed that, because I actually watched the post race where they had both of them on at that Skypad thing. And they were both laughing about it. So I think it was all good in the end.
Andy, so I might be taking these comments a little far, excuse me, but after hearing Zach Brown's comments, I think it was sometime during the week, are you excited? I'm thinking like maybe 2023 McLaren lineup, Lando Norris and Pato O'Ward, or what?
Well, it's going to be a question of two seats and three maybe qualified people. So, you know, it's F1. I mean, it changes at the drop of a hat. If Pato comes, Pato would have a bit of learning curve to do. He'd have to get on grip with the tires. I'm remembering the couple races he did in like GP2 where he would start out fast and then fall because he wasn't managing the Pirellis as good as everybody else. If he can get on par with that, there's no stopping that. The dude's got talent. He's got the ninja hands. Mm-hmm. We saw that in Detroit last week.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, ever
he's
since
looking
I
real
put,
good right now in IndyCar, but
put that car that you gave me, James, up on the man up down in the man cave, you know, up on the shelf there. I mean, he's been dominant. I think it's a little bit of combination of you buying it and me putting it up there. You know, that's all it takes. So
that's the magic, baby.
We'll gladly have on the show. We'll talk about it.
There's another one. All right. So the last of the mid-pack drivers, I think John has a few things to say about this man. But he probably gave me my favorite quote so far of the year on team radio. Why the fuck did you guys not listen to me? John, why didn't they listen to Bottas?
Bottas and your garbage. No, I mean, listen, I think today is a little bit of a combination of Valtteri being Valtteri, and yeah, they should have listened. I mean, we'll get into Mercedes' strategy here in a little bit. They clearly fucked up from start to finish. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, Charles, right off the bat, showed the undercut was powerful. Ricardo, shortly thereafter, passed two cars on the undercut. Right there, you had two prime examples of the power of the undercut. So here it is. We have, you know, a few weeks back, we have Monaco where there is no undercut, and Mercedes try that with probably the best that there is, maybe second best there is on tires, potentially behind, you know, him and Checo with Lewis there. That doesn't work. And now this week we have an actual case example here of the undercut and how powerful it is, and we tend to ignore it. So I think it is a combination now. I mean, when it comes to Valtteri, again, you know, we keep hearing these encouraging radio things, you know, on the, you know, Valtteri, James, go get him, Tiger. You know, you can do it, whatever. You know, we keep hearing this garbage over the radio, and I just laugh every time I hear it, because at no point is he ever going to challenge Max Verstappen for that P2 for the vast majority of this race. I mean, I'm just like, my wife and I are sitting there watching the race again on our tiny little iPad here, trying to squint into it. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm like, she's like, you know, why are you laughing? I'm like, because he's not going to do that. This is not what he does. He's not ever going to challenge anyone. Even when he got in DRS, he didn't do shit with it. So, and then you come around, obviously, in the race. Yeah, I know the tires were screwed up. But if he would have battled at least for half a lap, maybe, I would have been like, all right. Gave it his all, gave it the old college try. But, I mean, the very first corner when Max was on his butt, he locks it up and slides off, and it's a no-show. Like, dude, all you had to do was hold him up for half a lap maybe, and Lewis probably wins this race. But you couldn't do shit.
A Mercedes locks up and slides off in an important part of the race. Where have I heard that before?
I know. But I'm like, come on, man. I'm like, all you had to do was just maintain your pace through that corner. You got yourself through the DRS. At that point, you're going into some twisty parts. At best case scenario, if you get through that, Max doesn't pass you until turn one. At least you give Lewis a fighting chance there. And, you know, I know there was probably some people online saying, oh, he locked up because he, you know, he's not a team player anymore. No, I think genuinely he just ran out of talent once again. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't think you
maybe
a Formula One driver can, but I don't think he would intentionally lock his own tires and screw himself over
for a guy that
has, God, I hope that's not where we are.
Literally, like, and every time he looks in the mirror, George is standing right behind him. You know, like the whole like a horror movie. Yeah, exactly.
With a PowerPoint ready to go, by the way.
George is just literally biding his time until he takes your seat. You got to be on your A game. I mean, I assume he's doing everything he can for himself to try to prove to the world that he doesn't suck. And we, you know, we talked about it 1,000 times on the show. If he gets out front, he could be a dominant driver if he has clean air. Anything past that, don't expect anything from him. At one point, they were talking about, oh, maybe he's going to challenge Lewis and they're going to have to implement team orders. I'm like, really? Come on, guys. I mean, are you just looking for something to talk about? Because we know that's not going to happen. So
he had himself a great Friday, and then after that, he kind of disappointed.
Overall disappointed. Again, you hold him for half a lap. At least you give give Lewis a fighting chance against Max. You know, it was Hungary 2.0, Hungary 3.0, except the opposite order this way with Max being the hunter. I just, I mean, they should have listened to him. But here's the thing, too, and we'll get into it, Lewis. Both of the guys were screaming early on that the undercut was powerful. And they should have at least pitted one of the guys. Now, why the hell Mercedes chose to pit Valtteri before Lewis? Mm-hmm. Again, I don't know what the hell Toto and team were smoking today, because you knew Valtteri. Here it is. Valtteri pits first on the track that has a massive undercut and does absolutely nothing. Max pits next and overtakes Lewis and pulls a gap on Valtteri all at the same time. That's the difference between driver skill right there.
It's not only the pit strategy, but what the heck is Mercedes doing with their chassis?
I don't know.
I think explain that one to me, please. Why would you give the worst driver the better chassis?
I don't know if they're just trying to make it interesting this year. You know, the FIA called and said, listen, we'll give you an extra $50 million on the side if you can at least make this shit last a while. Yeah. You know, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, the chassis thing would have made sense of the last 3 or 4 years when Mercedes just is dominating. They can, like, try something like that just to shut down the haters. But, like, it's like, maybe you shouldn't be doing that right now. It's just Mercedes under pressure.
Yeah. No, you know? This is what we've been saying.
This is what it looks like.
This is exactly what it looks like. You know, and James Vowles came on the radio and even said that this was on us.
Yeah, I mean, they've lost a lot of points this year based on pure strategy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously Lewis didn't help himself out at Baku, so we kind of got to count that into effect. You know, flipping a button, that's not never going to help you out there. But between Monaco and today, I mean, you lost a shit ton of points when there was just no need to. Do the logical thing. And you know, everyone says do the undercut, and what do? They go for the over, and then vice versa at Monaco. It just doesn't make any sense to me. But anyways.
Absolutely love to see it. And on that note, we will be taking a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about the podium finishers.
Support for the Outlap F1 podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Big news, everyone. Manscaped has just released their new cologne scent to help you feel good and smell good all over and all the time. Manscaped has been trusted by over 2 million men worldwide, so join the movement now for all your below-the-waist grooming needs. We already know that Manscaped has the perfect package 3.0 for all your grooming needs, but they didn't stop there. Complete your grooming game with a new refined cologne signature scent by Manscaped. The same signature scent that's in all the Manscaped formulas, this cologne is a perfect complement to your collection. It's light, approachable, and gentlemanly-like in all the right ways. Think of it as your roommate for the night in the town to keep you fresh and ready for anything. It's calming and inviting. This signature scent introduces a light citrus burst before settling in for an incredible woodsy and masculine finish. This 50 milliliter spray cologne is even hypoallergenic, cruelty-free, dye-free, paraben-free, and 100% vegan. It even comes in a beautifully designed glass bottle that makes a statement, and the manly scent sets the mood for any occasion. I've been personally using this product for about a month though, and let me tell you, it smells incredible, and my significant other has certainly been enjoying it as well. Right now, our listeners of the Outlap F1 podcast can get 20% off plus free shipping by using the code OUTLAP, that's OUTLAP, one word, at manscaped.com. 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com.
All right, welcome back to Season 3, Episode 23 of the Outlap F1 podcast. I am your host, James, along with John and Andy, and we are talking about the French Grand Prix race review. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Discord, and Reddit at Outlap F1 Podcast. You can email the show at chatnow@outlapf1.com. Make sure to visit our website, www.outlapf1.com, where you can find all of our episodes, including the Sabre Cook interview. So make sure you go and check those out. All right, boys, now we move on to the podium. And with that, we talk about Sergio Checo Perez first. Started his day in fourth, finished in third to bring home 15 points for the championship-leading Red Bull Racing team. Awesome day by Checo. Can't ask for much more than that. He went real long on his first stint. So he made it a one-stopper. Well, he had a split strategy from his teammate, Max. Sergio, these last two races, has done everything Red Bull has been looking for quite some time, to have a excellent wingman for their main guy, Max Verstappen. So, I mean, everything was awesome for Sergio. Clearly figured out the car. He looks comfortable out there. He did get a little lucky at the end, which I think we can focus our discussion on here. But there was a note towards the end after he had passed Bottas for third place. Note came up. They were investigating it, whatever. Came out and said that there was no extra investigation necessary, whatever. But he did seem to get a little bit lucky because he clearly did exceed the track limits there. But the stewards, I mean, the only way it makes sense is that the stewards must have thought the pass was well and done before he actually went over track limits. Andy, do you agree with the ruling? Were you surprised with it at all?
Well, I'll tell you who was surprised by it, and that was Mercedes, because the big question was, well, once he passes Bottas, why the hell didn't you just bring Bottas in, put him on soft tires, and let him go out and try to get past the slap? He had a more than enough gap back to Norris.
Yeah, like 50-something seconds.
Yeah, he could have easily done that. So Mercedes were kind of banking on the fact, if he stays within 5 seconds and Perez gets a 5-second penalty, maybe then we can kind of, get ourselves back up on the podium somehow. That did not happen. Stewards were ruled, obviously, that the pass was done. I thought that he definitely is off the track. But mm-hmm. I think he doesn't go off the track until the pass is almost substantially made. And I'm pretty sure that that's what the stewards ended up concluding.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we should apologize to Mercedes and their fans, Andy. It's not fair to assume that they can get a pit stop done in that 52-second gap that they had on Lando Norris. Nobody knows how long Mercedes pit stops can go, but definitely they can exceed 52 seconds. John, what'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think both Red Bull drivers got a little lucky today with lack of Stewart calls. We'll get into the other one in a minute.
No.
But, I mean, honestly, when it comes to this situation, I mean, Andy's saying the politically correct thing and saying he thinks the stewards felt like the move was done. Personally, I think they just looked at it and said, Valtteri, what does it matter? Does it really matter? No, it doesn't matter. Just let him have it. Valtteri, I mean, even if Checo was trying to let him pass, Valtteri probably wouldn't know how to overtake him. So,
with DRS.
Who cares? Valtteri would be like, hang on, let me hit the brakes early this time. I don't want to get too close. This is a little tight, guys. So, yeah. In all seriousness, no, it was pretty questionable. Again, I think both of them got pretty lucky today, in my opinion. Not saying it would change the end of result necessarily, I don't know, but we'll get into the other one here in a minute.
Well, Checo in his post-race comments seems to think that he could have passed Lewis with a few more laps. He said, back-to-back podiums is still solid points, but I just needed probably 3 more laps to get past Lewis for the 1-2 finish. So we'll keep pushing to get it at our home race in Austria. So I don't know about 3 more laps, but that would have been something if Checo pulled a one-stopper and was able to get in front of Lewis there. But I guess we'll never know for sure.
I think he probably could have caught him.
I
mean, he was on significantly faster tires at that point. Mm-hmm. He probably could have caught him. You know, the old, it's one thing to catch, another thing to pass. But Yeah, I mean, it would have been an interesting battle there if we had a few more laps.
I mean, you got to figure this will be the standard Red Bull strategy. If Max is starting like one or two and Checo starting three or four, it's like, hey, Checo, you know that thing you're really good at? We're going to need you to do that on the first stint. Go as long as you can. And then we have all these options. And it's...
I mean, Red Bull's playing to their driver's strengths. I mean, what a concept. It's amazing. How you do it.
That Christian Horner.
Yeah, when you've got two... Yeah, when you got two bullets in the chambers, you know, it's amazing what you can do when there. So that's something, obviously, that's the thing that Red Bull has been lacking for a long, long time. They've never had that second, you know, dog in the fight, and now they've got it. So,
and the other thing that I think bears mentioning, they also have a power unit that is not only on par, but might be slightly better than Mercedes at this point. Mm-hmm. That Honda engine.
And this is a new one too, right?
Yeah, it was a brand new power unit, so it didn't have any miles on it. So, and we know that before this season, Honda had thrown whatever development they were going to want to ever do, because it's their last year in the sport. They threw it at that engine, and it obviously has worked. It's come up double sixes for them. So, I mean, you know, it's the full package for Red Bull, and Mercedes now have to now shift their thinking. They are no longer the dominant team. They have to go and be the hunter. And it's a position they've not been in 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited to see what comes of it though. From front to back, the Red Bull chassis and motor is definitely on par with Mercedes. Chassis is definitely a massive step up. I mean, we talked about it multiple times throughout the race. The Red Bull cars were trimmed quite a bit back in on an aero standpoint, and with significantly less downforce than Mercedes was running. And yet, even despite having all the twisty parts, Max was able to still pull maintain or pull a distance on Lewis lap after lap after lap, despite having significantly less downforce. So clearly, they've got, you know, all the stars aligned as far as it goes. I think for Red Bull, I think in Honda, it all comes down to reliability. Again, we've got a hell of a long way to go in this season. A lot can happen, and they can certainly happen to Mercedes. I mean, you know, they may start getting a little desperate, start pushing things a little more than maybe they intended to, and this championship might get wrapped up early for a Red Bull driver necessarily. So, but who knows? We got, you know, I don't know how many. I can't do math. So we got a lot of races to go.
Nobody knows how many races we have left.
That's true. That's in the hands of a higher power
at this point.
Yeah. That's another prop that we can do. How many more races will we have?
that's something Mercedes is going to have to keep track of, because we're not guaranteed to have 23 races here, so they need to get their shit together.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on to the other Mercedes driver, Lewis Hamilton. Started second, finished second, got 18 points. So he did finish this race, did finish in front of Mazepin. So this is progress, John. How are we feeling?
Yeah, I mean, all in all, I feel like... like I said, I think if Valtteri holds Max up a little bit, I think Lewis potentially wins this race. I still think it might have come down to a last lap pass, but one way or the other. But, you know, all in all, I feel like considering where they were on Friday to come back once again, that is one thing they've – I mean, I guess it's a positive note on one side of things that they've managed to recover the last couple of weeks when they've looked pretty shit on Friday. They managed to come back and had decent races or decent Sundays, I should say. But on the other side, why the hell are we starting so far off on Friday that, you know, we've got to recover a mile just to get back on par with Honda? So, I mean, you know, again, Lewis said pretty early on, I mean, that the tires weren't going to make it. He was very, very clear on the radio as well. He said, the undercut is powerful. Let's make sure we do our pit stop first. And what do? Not do it first. So... You know, and then when you come out of the first, I still honestly don't know how to – I don't think Mercedes knows how to explain the first pit stop. He had a three-second lead when Max pitted and comes out behind him. I don't know. There was some miscommunication, it seems like, as well. I don't think Lewis knew that he was pitting until late in that on that first pit stop. I don't think he knew that he was pitting until late in that lap, and I think – there probably was a little bit more time in the bag there to be gained had he been pushing flat out. But it was, I think he was past, you know, basically at the end of the second long, or I guess technically the third straightaway, if you count the chicane. I think that's about where he figured out he was boxing. So I'm sure there was some time lost there, not knowing that he was supposed to be pushing flat fucking out during that time. But regardless, I mean, it was a masterclass by Honda. They did the right thing today. They looked at the data and made the appropriate decision. Lewis said straight up, we've got to find, you know, we're off, you know, a step in kind of every regard. We got to find something. We got to dig deep. We're on here. So championship's far from over. We got a hell of a long way to go. And I don't think anybody's going to give up, you know, on that side of things, but they've definitely got to figure things out. And obviously we're going to Red Bull's home track now in an area where Red Bull's typically done quite well the last few years. So it might be a bad month for Mercedes.
Yeah, and a track, though, and I don't want to steal your thunder, Andy, but I just looked at the weather report for Spielberg, Austria next weekend, and it's raining every day. Like 80% chance from, like, Thursday to Monday. So,
right.
Which probably means it'll be as hot as...
Well, cross your fingers now.
Let's hope the cell doesn't do what happened today, which is hit the mountains and disappear. Like, it was green, red, yellow thing that was coming right towards the circuit. Right at the middle of the F3 race, and then it disappeared. Unbelievable. But anyway, I mean, yeah, I mean, I would – I have two thoughts on Mercedes here. One, now they're like a wounded animal, and now we see if they come back and they fight like a wounded animal and change their strategy, can they do that? The other one is I'm surprised that Mercedes in general – always now is looking in terms of strategy. They don't want to, they obviously don't think they're as fast as the Red Bull is, because they never want to fight Red Bull on equal terms. They're always looking for a tire advantage, an undercut, an overcut, or something. It's never been, we've yet to see Max and Lewis on the same strategy with almost the same kind of age of tire going real head to head. And I think in order to win this championship, if Lewis wants to do it, he's got to do that at some point. So, you know, can they change up and figure this out? And they're going to have to do it quickly. I know this is one of the best run teams in sport. It has been for 10 years. I can't believe that they've just suddenly forgotten how to do this. But they're on the back foot, and they got to get it right, and they got to get it right quick.
You know, honestly, I kind of hope this goes and you know, there's still some people out there that claim that the only reason that Lewis Hamilton has 7 championships is because he's got the best car and yada yada. But Lewis is driving above that car where it should be week after week after week. And, yeah, Max has been a step up on the podium a couple of times now, but Lewis is right there with him on a not-as-good car. They're down on power, or at least equal on power, and they're hell of a down on aero downforce. And Max and Lewis are still toe-to-toe, despite Max having a mechanical advantage there. So that's the only positive things I can kind of see out of this. It's like, hopefully it shuts some of the haters up that, you know, you clearly don't have a good car, yet you're still pushing. And this thing's going to go down to the wire, I think, unless Mercedes gives up on it.
John, I don't think you understand the psychology of a hater. This will change.
Well, the sensible ones.
This will just fuel the fire that burns.
You can, and to your point, John, you can look at the Saturday pace where, you know, FP3, they're down 7/10, and Lewis, by his driving ability and his qualifying pace and him doing everything that he had to do, got that thing down to 2/10. He got half a second back on his own.
Yeah, can't argue with that. So we'll talk about the winner here. Max Verstappen starts in first, finishes in first, gets all 25 points for Red Bull. Actually, all 26, I'm sorry, because he got the fastest lap as well. So maxed out on points for Max. The 82nd win for Honda. And essentially flipped to a two-stop strategy, which essentially won him the race today. Andy, any overall comments about Max's day before we give to John? I think he might want to get into his
Well, I mean, it was a tirade. Heck of a – I mean, you look at lap one, and Max didn't do himself any favors today either.
No.
You know, he goes wide. He goes onto that, you know, abrasive tarmac. Doesn't go around the bollards, which was kind of an interesting decision. But he was able to get away with it because I guess he didn't run afoul of whatever the protocol was. There's so many of those. I lost count. but he was able to, you know, recover, get on the pace, put pressure on Lewis throughout basically the entirety of the race, and that's what won him the race today. And Mercedes blinked. You know, they put pressure on him, and Mercedes blinked. And, you know, it really was kind of – once he got there at the end, the tire difference was so big, it didn't matter.
Yeah, the amount of, like, life that Mercedes probably took out of their tires just trying to stay that close to Max for as long as they did. And Lewis was right on his ass for a long, long time there. I feel like that just ended up playing right into their hands, where they were able to pull off that second stop, and I mean their tires were gone. I actually agreed with Lewis that time. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, I'm a Max guy. I got a Red Bull hat sitting right behind the camera right now. You know, it's, you know, I think as I've told you guys, I feel like I've tapped him as my driver of the future. Him and George, you know, once Lewis hangs up the boots. I'm not trying to be too much of a you know, hater on this particular deal. But the lap one incident, in my opinion, I've got to call bullshit on that. The steward said they were not going to penalize him because he was officially in turn two at the time that he ran off, and the rule only applies to turn one. However, with that being said, it's a left-hand turn for turn one. Every single replay that I saw this incident, including the onboards, Max Verstappen is turning left when he loses control of his car and has to correct and therefore go off the track. Now tell me, if the first turn is a left-hander and the second turn is a right-hander, if you're turning left still when it happens, which turn do you think you're in? I'm going to think you're in turn one because it's a left-hand turn and you're turning left. So I think that's bullshit. Personally, I think if that's Lewis Hamilton, that's probably a 5-second, no doubt penalty, especially the last couple of years. The boy, they've thrown the book at the guy. If that's like a McLaren driver, I feel like they're going to get penalized for that. I think
well, if it's Lando, they're adding four penalty points to his license, giving him a race ban.
That's what I'm saying. I think the only reason wasn't a penalty was for the overall show, because if they penalize him, this becomes probably a boring race with Lewis Hamilton riding off into the sunset. If this is a 5-second or something like that they've got to add on to that first stop, Lewis is gone at that point. I feel like I think this is a bullshit call. James, I see your face over there, but if his pit stop is 7 seconds, 7 to 8 seconds because of the 5-second hold there, tell me how in the world he gets that, because they were equal. Equal as equal can be on actual tires before the – I mean, that gives so many options, so many variations. Now, maybe a Perez or something crazy like that still happens, but as far as Max via Lewis, when it comes to the championship, Lewis gained significant points today if they call that 5-second penalty on lap one. But for the grand – for the show, you give a good guy a penalty on lap – championship leader a 5-second penalty on lap one – and an error when no one wants to see a Mercedes win, that's bad for the show. It's bad for the Sunday ratings. And personally, I think.
But how much do you think it has to do with it being lap one?
I was going
to
say, I think the only overriding factor is the fact that it was
they
lap
said
one.
He was in turn two. That was the reason they didn't call the penalty. Yet he was turning left when it happened. So therefore, at no point had he shifted to a right hand turn, which would have been turn two when this happened. It's bullshit because it's bad for the show. So, in my opinion, they pulled an ass far today, but whatever. I'll leave it at that. I think it's bullshit. I think Lewis wins this race if you give an appropriate penalty there. And yeah, I agree with you, Andy. If this is Lando, they probably call it an unsafe maneuver, unsafe reentry, and they dock him or something. It's some stupidity like that. If this is Nikita Mazepin, he probably just like goes, I don't know, halfway to Paris.
No, he gets one penalty point
for that. Yeah, but anywho,
anything else on that, Andy? Before we wrap up,
the only thing that I would say is to your point, James, is stewards are they don't want to give a lot of huge race changing penalties on a lap one incident. I think if that's lap two, lap three, whatever, you're probably right, John. They're probably going to throw the book at it a little bit more. But it's really hard when, you know, you're starting at a standing start, you're trying to make the corner. He pulled out of it. And he did self-penalize for nothing else because he lost the lead because of it. Now, if he kept the lead, yeah, you're right. That's 5-second penalty. That's
well, let's not forget, too, there was some questionable track limits on Saturday qualifying in that Q3 last run as well. A lot of people think that last run should have been stripped because there was
for turn six?
Clearly off track. The replays are very clear. There's a lot of tire well beyond the stripes there. But anyways, not good for the show. We'll leave it at that, I think, in my personal opinion. I think they did what was best for the ratings this weekend. Now, I don't know if Max, is going to be fast enough to ever take it. I have to go back and look at the sectors and everything else. But a lot of people think I'm a little indifferent on that because I know they hadn't been given the most stringent of review on that circuit all, on that turn all weekend. But still, yeah, I'll leave it at that.
I mean, it doesn't surprise me that a lot of people think that way, but that's just because there's a lot of Lewis fans.
The qualifying thing is a sensor. I mean, that's not a human call. That's unless the sensor fails.
When you stop the replay,
At that point, that's something different.
And the tire, all four tires are clearly over. I mean, I don't understand why Mercedes didn't pull a Red Bull like Red Bull has done on Mercedes time and time and time again and said, hello, FIA. Here's the footage.
Right.
I thought for sure when I woke up this morning that there was going to be some kind of bullshit going on with Mercedes and the FIA. And we were at least going to have a discussion about that in pre-race, and there was nothing. So, again, I put that on analysis paralysis from Mercedes. That was a clear opportunity to find to poke a hole in a vulnerable, armor there that is Red Bull. You got to find every little chink in the armor you can to try to win this thing. To me, you got to at least try it.
Well, that comes back to what I was saying, being a hunter versus being the hunted. I mean, they've been so used to not having to have to look at those things that I don't think that they did. I mean, I honestly didn't see this. I'd actually want to go back and look at this to see, was it clear? Was it as clear as people are saying? It didn't pop up anywhere in any of at least my followings on various social media this weekend. But
I think it was mentioned I think Crofty might have said something live during quali about it, but at least one of the because there was a couple of off track incidents with Max, but regardless, how Mercedes don't even try to push this agenda point on the FIA. To me, is an epic fail on their part. They might not have won. They probably wouldn't have won. But how you don't even make it a discussion point, I don't understand that. But anyways.
Well, I'm trying to look up this video as we continue the podcast so I can see the qualifying one because I haven't seen that yet. So while I do that, John, why don't you tell us the recap of the driver standings.
Verstappen Thanks. With 131 points, followed by Lewis at 119. Perez has 84 points. Norris, a strong P4 and 76 points. Bottas, down in fifth place with 59 points. Charles Leclerc, 52. Who would have thought maybe Charles Leclerc was going to finish higher in the standings than Bottas this year? that's a bet we should have had. I think both of us would have probably put on Leclerc there. Seventh, Sainz with 42 points. Gasly in eighth, 37 points. Danny Ric, 34 points in ninth, and Sebastian Vettel now just 22 points behind Charles Leclerc in 10th place with 30 points.
And then the team standings, Andy?
So in first place, we have Red Bull on 215 points. In second is Mercedes with 178. In third is McLaren with 110. In fourth is Ferrari at 94. In fifth is AlphaTauri at 45. Sixth is Aston Martin at 40. Seventh is Alpine on 29 points. Eighth, Alfa Romeo in two. Ninth place is now Williams at zero, but on count back, they now have the ninth position. And in 10th, bringing up the rear once again, Haas F1 on 0 points.
Thank you, Andy. And now, John, I'll send it to you for the fan email segment. Thank you to everybody who sent in a question or a comment.
Yeah, we had quite a few this week coming in on Twitter. And we had a hell of an amazing discussion on our Discord channel today. So, again, if you haven't joined that, go check it out. It's growing by the day. There was a lot of in-race chatter, a lot of post-race chatter going on. I had to join the fight a little bit later on, again, because of technical issues, being at the beach, not being able to watch the race live, and having to go on airplane mode for most of the day to avoid results. I saw that James's brother texted he and I, and I didn't even look at the text message. I just responded, not reading your text message. So, but again, appreciate all the emails that came in today. So the first one we had from Rachel Fleming. Thank you again, Rachel, for sending another one in. She said, did George Russell put another nail into the coffin of Bottas's Mercedes career today? It wasn't so much that Bottas wasn't good. I thought he drove okay-ish, but George got another top result for once Mr. Saturday became Mr. Sunday. Definitely excellent points there. Joshua Kerr says, it's the resident Max Verstappen fan here with a smile on his face. Even though I wasn't confident at first that the win could be achieved with a two-stop, it's a role reversal with Barcelona, and I'm still punching myself that Red Bull lead both championships. Sunday afternoons will never be chilled again. Very cool, Josh. Jenny Donahue says, hey, Outlap F1 guys, can I hope we can get a review of the band as well? I assume she's talking about the podium band.
Yeah. The French Legion playing the various
Andy,
anthems.
Can you give us a rating?
That didn't go so well.
He had a school rating and an A to F rating. C plus, yeah.
I'd give it a
C
plus.
Somewhere C minus somewhere in there. Yeah, I agree.
Them trying to do the Dutch national anthem, they struggled a little bit. They were okay with, you know, the Austrian one.
They apparently didn't practice enough for that one. Shame on them. So, Eric H says, it's funny to me that everyone was expecting that race to be a bore, but I really enjoyed it. Maybe it's because the teams are better aligned, so there are just battles all over the track, perhaps. Maybe the director is doing a better job of finding the little dramas in track and amplifying them. Yeah, it could be. They did a pretty decent job today of showing us. We had some picture-in-picture overtakes as well. But I also super enjoyed this season. Eric, I know you're a newer F1 fan. And yeah, typically this race is a bore, but I think we can all agree this one had us all on our edge of our seats. So thoroughly enjoyed it.
I'm wondering if the subtle little changes that we talked about in the preview actually helped with some of, like, because there was more overtaking possibilities than I've ever seen here. You know, it wasn't just the straight DRS places where we would expect it, but there were even some twisty bit overtakes today that I'd never seen other than maybe like in junior formula or F3 before.
Today. Yeah, for 70% of this track basically getting some kind of tweak. Yeah, I mean, it didn't really get a whole lot of attention on the broadcast, but I mean, that's an excellent point. I kind of had forgotten about that, Andy, until just now. But it definitely felt a lot more like an F2 race today than it did a Formula 1 race, as far as guys being able to ride on each other's gearboxes for extended periods of time and things like that. So that was cool to see. 18 Hutless says, shout out to Danny Rick, his first full weekend with McLaren. I agree. It's about time the boy showed up. So I know he's been spending a lot of time in the sim with the engineers back in Woking, and I think it's really starting to pay off. Hopefully that continues moving forward. He also says, let's talk about Alpine's encouraging home weekend. I know Ocon obviously had a bad day, but you know, overall, Alonso looked a hell of a lot better than he has. So a decent race for the home team there, especially with Ocon's contract. Hopefully things are looking good for Alpine moving forward. Photo_GT97 says, I see a lot of people calling it that Max is winning the title now. What are the Outlap podcast crew's thoughts on this? James, you calling it?
I'm not calling it yet, but if I had to put my money on Lewis or Max right now, it's all going to Max. And I think a big part of that is
fair
Sergio
enough,
Perez.
Andy?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely pressure on Mercedes, but like I was saying earlier, I think I view Mercedes now as like a wounded animal, and sometimes a wounded animal mm-hmm. has a couple of really, really impressive strikes left in it before the season ends. They haven't forgotten how to win in just because they're under some pressure. So I think they will analyze, they will get better, they will put up a fight. Is it going to be enough? I think that's the question, but it's advantage Max and Red Bull right now for sure.
Yeah, and you talk about the pressure like we do a lot, especially me and you, Andy, about once you start putting that pressure on Mercedes, we'll see how they actually react. On the flip side, though, we've never seen the pressure on Max
Correct.
As he gets closer and closer to getting a driver's championship.
Correct.
So we'll see how he can handle that.
And Lewis finds another gear right when you think he's going to be out of it. And I go back to the one that he didn't win, and that was the Rosberg year where he was on a complete other level those last five races of that season. I've never seen anybody be that dominant before.
Very true.
So it's not over yet.
For DT97 also asks, do you think Mercedes' last few races are a blip, or are we witnessing the downfall of the Mercedes hybrid dominance? James, what do you think?
Maybe the downfall of the pure dominance. At least now there's one other team that can join them regularly. I wouldn't call this a blip. I think this is going to be a season long thing. You know, they're not going to dominate clearly this season. So, I want it to be the beginning of the end, but I'm not going to get that high on it yet.
Yeah, I don't know that this is the end of. It feels like a little bit of changing of the guard, but I'm also cognizant of the fact that this is such a one-off year with in terms of regulation and everything. We have no idea where these cars are going to be come 2022. So, I don't know that it's fully there, but they are definitely on the back foot. That's for sure.
Isn't it such a Formula One thing to happen that right when you have the best years ever, you know, like this could go down as – a top five ever title fight that we change the regulations again and reset everything and may not get it right for a few years. That's such a Formula One thing that could happen. But and then lastly, our buddy Matt Polanski from the Red Sector MotoGP podcast said, and Matt, I'll do my best. And usually it's Deanna pulling this one, but she says, he says, today's race is called, wait, Paul Ricard can be interesting. Apparently, once in a while, every four years, apparently. Mercedes is at it again, screwing up a pit strategy. This race had everything. No safety cars, no retirements, no change in curves, and power karting. Power karting is that thing where the lines around the track aren't even symmetrical and look like shit. Built on the back of strategy cluster, neither Ferrari driver finishing the points, just felt the need to point that one out. I think that was for you, James. So, and thank you again, once and all. We got a ton of emails coming this week, so I appreciate all that.
Yeah, shout out to everybody sending the emails. Thank you. All right, so let's go ahead and move into our awards for the weekend. We will start off with John and the Weekly Rubbish Award.
For me, it would have to be Ferrari, in my opinion. I didn't think they were going to do great this week, as I said in the preview, but I did not expect neither driver to be in the points. And I certainly did not expect Charles to be in P16. So yeah, Ferrari for me.
Andy, who you got?
I was originally going to yell it about Formula E, but this race was entertaining enough that I don't think I need to necessarily do that. So I'm just going to pick on a kind of an easy target. I know he is, but I don't really care because I'm sick of seeing it. Nikita Mazepin, what the hell are you doing on my grid? Get the hell out of Dodge. It just from the non-apology apology, and I think I even tweeted bag alert, major bag alert because of it. I don't get what you're doing. I know you're, you know, silver spoon in your mouth, but yuck, it just gets worse.
And I'm going to have to go with Mercedes for my rubbish award. I think they had a terrible race day. I really do. And that will lead us right into our analysis paralysis award. Andy, who do you have?
I will pile on Mercedes here because I think this is where it's appropriate. How the hell do you not cover that second pit stop? Oh, you left your guy out, and you basically left him out hanging out to dry, and you saw what happened, and you lost the race because of it. Fight on equal terms. You have an awesome driver in Lewis. I get you don't have any back help in Valtteri, but put Lewis in the best opportunity to win a race. Give him the racy strategy.
I can't say it any better than that. I also have Mercedes as my analysis paralysis award. John?
Probably.
I'll take the liberty of saying Deanna.
But she would have given you a lot of shit for your lack of
that's a clean four sweep
there a minute ago.
All right. Dark horse of the day. I'll start it off. I got Pierre Gasly. Kind of talked about him a little bit ago. I think he's really getting the most out of that car. and just another good performance today. So, Andy, who you got?
I'm going to give this one to Fernando Alonso and Alpine because he was dropping and he stopped it, and that's impressive. The guy still got it. We've seen a lot of guys, you know, in the new teams coming to grips with their cars and their respective rides. Good to see Fernando's got some fight in him. I hope it's more to come. Good on you, Fernando, today.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
For me, I think I'm going to go with John, who you got for Lando Dark Horse? Norris. I mean, I know his consistent finishes proves that he's not necessarily a dark horse these days. But, I mean, again,
that's how
the
I
majority
felt.
Halfway through this race, I didn't even know if he was going to be in the points. I don't know if he even thought he was going to be in the points. I thought he just – and then to come back and still finish ahead of Ricardo as well, I just was blown away by that. So I'll give it to him.
Yeah, for my dark horse, initially I was like, oh, maybe Ricardo. And I was like, nah, he got beat by Norris. And I was like, oh, maybe I should do Norris. But then it just felt weird picking Norris as the dark horse with how his season's been going this year. So I was like, Gasly's fair. But for as far as overall driver of the day, which I believe the fan vote went to Verstappen, not that that means anything, but I'm going with the fans here. I thought Max Verstappen was driver of the day. Just Max doing Max things. Andy?
Yeah, for no other particular reason than he won the race and did everything he needed to do this weekend and was dominant throughout all of it. Max Verstappen, driver of the day.
Yeah, if you eliminate lap one.
And John.
I will give it to Max Verstappen / Red Bull. Red Bull made the appropriate decisions and Max executed to perfection. So, yeah, I agree.
Yes, sir. Andy, did I let you do yours?
Yeah.
You're
getting older.
Right? I gave it to Max.
Zoning out here. It's getting kind of late. Yeah, you ain't lying. So for the recap of the race predictions, John.
Thank God I got a little bit of cushion in this championship right now. So myself, starting I came up 10th last. 1 point for the day. I had one for a podium. And tied for, I guess, second place would be Andy and James. They both had 4 points. Andy had one for podium, one for fastest lap driver, one for fastest lap time, and one for bonus pick. James had one for pole time, or pole driver, one for pole time, one for podium, and one for bonus pick. And then Deanna, holy shit. You know, it's been a long, I know, the one time we can give her
when
praise.
When she's not on, here. When she's not on,
hopefully
of course.
She'll listen to it tomorrow morning. 5 points, leading the weekend, Deanna, of all people. I didn't think it was going to happen, guys. You know, she was riding up, you know, bringing up the rear for most of the third of the season. Yeah, bullshit.
I've had faith. I've had faith the whole time.
Look at them trying to suck up now. It's amazing. Deanna, 5 points on the day, one for pole driver, 3 for the podium, locked it out to perfection, and then another bonus point as well for the bonus picks. So none of us, unfortunately, good.
That would have been a little.
If we would have lost,
that would have been a lot of points on my old scoring system last year.
It would have been like 39.0542 points or something based on James's criteria. Thankfully, we simplified it this year.
And I, John, I can't not point out the fact that you picked the bonus positions for this race, and every one of us got at least 1 point in the bonus picks except for the guy that decided which bonus picks we were doing.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna have to pick next week as well. So
maybe you'll get better next week.
No more 8, 9, 10 for me. So yeah, so to prefer the season standings again. Thankfully, I have a little bit of a buffer here. I still lead with 25 points. Andy now calling a huge number back has 20. James in third place with 17. And Deanna right on everybody's tail now with 15 points. So she went from being basically out of the equation to right there in the fight in one race. So it shows you what can happen.
Yep, long season, long season. Any final thoughts from you tonight, Andy?
Well, you know, this is the one, first of three, so, you know, you don't really have a whole lot of time to rest and recuperate. You pack up, you go again. We now go to Austria for our first doubleheader. And like you said, look at that weather. I'm actually looking at the weather here. Hopefully the tornadoes don't come and kill us in Chicago, and we'll be on Wednesday with our preview of Austria 1.
Yeah, you're not far from the infamous Oakland tornado from back in the day now, are you?
No, when that thing would have been right in the heart of downtown.
Well, so, if it makes you feel any better, in the middle of the tropical 50 storm years, warning. So
coming up on that.
Picked a great week to go to the beach. I think we're in the clear, but it is raining pretty good out there right now. But I think last night got a little rough. It was a little sketch, I'm not going to lie.
The world is ending, but we do have a battle for number one drivers in Formula One. So got to take the good with the bad. But yeah, I think that's it for tonight. Thanks for listening. We will have a Austria race one preview here in a few days, probably Wednesday night, coming out Thursday morning as usual. And then we'll be here to talk about the race review Sunday night. As Andy said, this is the first of our first leg of our first triple header of the year. So, we're excited. Got the first race down. It was an exciting one. Austria is usually pretty good, at least in my opinion. And if we throw some rain in on there, then things are going to get real spicy. Well,
here's how I'll leave it. If the French GP can be good, that means like the Russian GP can be good. The Abu Dhabi GP could be good. We could have dogs and cats living together. Russia, but who knows where this is going to go?
Good, I don't know.
All right, it's getting way too late.
It may be compelling because we may have a championship go down to the last race. Nothing else.
It's getting too late. Andy's getting delirious now. I think we got to shut it down. I mean, I'm hoping for the best, though.
Yeah, it's just been water in my cup tonight, boys. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, the ice cubes are water, maybe. All right, Andy, take us away, sir.
All right. May all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlap F1 Podcast or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support and we'll see you on the next one.